When her car was found crashed into a highway underpass, her body was nowhere to be seen. But soon enough, a local handyman was under arrest and pleading with his roommates to get rid of a bag he left in the trash. What they found inside shocked them. This is the story of Megan Barroso and the glitter in her hair that helped put the nail in the coffin for a serial assaulter of women. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. If you're on TikTok, you may already know this case because apparently it's gained popularity there recently as a way to warn women how to be safer on dates. But it starts all of the way back in July of 2001 when Megan Barroso was celebrating the birth of this great nation with some friends. She was 20 years old and a student at Moore Park College near Thousand Oaks, California, north of LA. A friend says she was into fashion, loved dressing up and down, and worked at a clothing store at the mall in high school so she could have that sweet, sweet employee discount. After high school, she got an office job and was excited about having her very own nameplate at her cubicle. On July 4th, a friend was having a barbecue, and then they would go to watch the fireworks on Silver Strand Beach. It was a long, fun night, and the group didn't break up until after 2:30 a.m., Megan's car was being worked on, so she had a rental at the moment, a dark green Pontiac Sunfire. She got in it and was 15 minutes down the road when one of her friends called. Someone had put their cell phone in her purse, and she'd accidentally driven off with it. So she turned back, but her friends never saw her again. Her car was found by a security guard soon after in Simi Valley, sideways, crashed into a median below the highway. He assumed the driver had been drunk, but then he noticed the 5 bullet holes in the car and the fact that there was no one inside. The car was still running, its windshield wipers and lights still on. There was blood inside and a flip-flop abandoned on the street outside. The shell casings left at the scene appeared to be from an assault rifle. As July was coming to an end, Megan's body still hadn't been found, but there was a break in her case. A man named Vincent Henry Sanchez was arrested on the 29th after breaking into a neighbor's home. While he was in jail, the 30-year-old handyman called his roommates and told them they needed to get rid of this bag he'd left in their trash, like now. And God bless the roommates, they were curious about what was inside. They found videotapes and photos of bound, gagged, and bleeding women, some being tortured by a man in a ski mask. They called 911. Obviously, the authorities came to search their home, and they found an assault rifle that was missing a piece. A piece of that same AK-47 was found near Megan's rental car. Based on the videos and the rifle and women's clothes, all of the evidence found in Sanchez's house, they charged him with 57 counts of assault and burglary. They named him as the Simi Valley rapist, a man they'd been looking for over 5 years for attacking a dozen women. Vincent Sanchez grew up in Simi Valley and was a high school wrestler, but he dropped out his junior year and went into construction like his dad. He had 7 siblings and what appeared to be a loving but very strict home, where the daughters wore long skirts and there was no TV. And maybe it was that strict upbringing that caused his first brush with the law in 1992. The 21-year-old Sanchez was dating a 17-year-old girl with a baby at the time, and apparently he thought the 1-year-old girl was a spoiled brat who needed to be disciplined by not allowing her to eat or be clothed. So when he saw his girlfriend just, you know, feeding her daughter one day, he choked the girlfriend and got sent to prison for a couple of years. He had also been convicted of burglary, admitted that he committed a carjacking and assault against a woman, and allegedly made death threats against another girlfriend over the years. But his roommate said he was likable in general. He cooked Mexican food for them and kept himself immaculate. I suppose they never could have guessed that starting in 1996, he began a spree of assaults. His first victim was a 19-year-old whose home he broke into while she and her family were sleeping. As more assaults like that one piled up, the police had been so desperate for any leads about the perp that they would sometimes go around asking young men for voluntary saliva samples in the hope of getting anywhere. Just days after Sanchez's arrest, search dogs found Megan's body off of Black Canyon Road in a ravine under feet of leaves and branches. They had to pull her up on a metal gurney using ropes. And despite the decomposition, she was easily identified by her clothes and the Irish ring her mom had given her when she was 17. She had died from a gunshot wound to the abdomen and was found in only her green shirt and underwear, but she was too decomposed for an assault kit. In October 2001, Sanchez went to court and admitted that he had assaulted 10 other women and killed Megan, but he wouldn't say that hers was a first-degree premeditated murder. Investigators believe that he shot Megan, then intentionally abducted her and assaulted her, and a grand jury had indicted him on it, but he refused to admit that he kidnapped or raped her. So prosecutors refused to accept his not-all-the-way-there plea, which would have left him with multiple life sentences. Now they wanted the death penalty. In the eyes of the court, he had effectively pleaded not guilty to Megan's murder and would go to trial. At trial in May 2003, multiple women testified against Sanchez for all of the things he'd done to them. They told their terrible stories about abductions at knife point or gunpoint, attacks by a man in a ski mask who broke into their homes, being bound with duct tape and cord. And then, to add insult to injury, having the guy who just assaulted them ask if they could have children together or if he could spend the night. One woman says he assaulted her 4 times, cuddled her for an hour afterward, and tried to bandage up the wound where he had stabbed her leg. The jury saw the 45-minute tape he made with this victim over his 5 hours with her, where she pretended to enjoy herself because he threatened to slit her dog's throat if she didn't. Afterward, he read her passages from the Bible. The jury also saw a 50-minute tape of him holding a hunting knife to the throat of another victim and asking if she'd rather die than be assaulted by him one more time. When she cried out in pain, he told her to knock it off. Sanchez's defense attorneys had tried to keep these tapes from being shown in court because they thought it would prejudice the jury against their client. And that argument always gets me because it's like, oh, good, I see we all agree that this guy is a monster and no reasonable juror would acquit him. So perhaps he should have just pleaded guilty and not wasted taxpayer money on a 4-month trial? It took the jury 4 days of deliberation, but they convicted Sanchez of the kidnapping, attempted rape, and first-degree murder of Megan Barroso. He had, of course, already pleaded guilty to the other assaults. I think what sealed the deal in Megan's case was that investigators found her blood on the passenger seat of Sanchez's truck, and the way it stained the seat revealed that she'd been sitting upright, meaning she wasn't dead when he took her from her car. They also had evidence that Sanchez had followed Megan in her car, shot at her back seat, pulled ahead of her, and cut her off as he shot at the side of her vehicle. He said he was angry that his girlfriend hadn't invited him to her family's 4th of July picnic, so the theory is that he was out looking for her and set his eyes on another victim instead. The fact that he was clearly taking Megan to a second location pointed to him having enough time to think through everything he was going to do to her next. During sentencing, the defense tried to limit the number of Megan's loved ones giving victim impact statements in court, which, again, gross, but her dad was able to speak. He said Megan was like a bloom that was about to open, a beautiful young lady about to flourish. But a psychologist testified about Sanchez's personality disorder, saying he liked to be able to outsmart the police by not getting caught, that he was assaulted physically and sexually as a child and now needs to feel powerful by victimizing women, that his dad was a violent alcoholic and an older cousin took advantage of him. Still, a jury decided that he should be executed for his many crimes. Sanchez didn't react to the verdict, but apologized and said that he deserved to die. He said he didn't intend to kill Megan on the 4th of July and actually had planned to end his own life. He said he still didn't know how it had come to this, but who really knows what the truth is. California has frozen executions since then, so Sanchez is now 55 years old and incarcerated at the California Men's Colony. Now, the reason that this case remains popular on social media today is the glitter in Megan's hair when she died. Someone at one of the 4th of July parties in 2001 sprinkled red glitter on people's heads for fun, and as everyone knows, you absolutely cannot clean up every speck of glitter no matter how hard you try. So even after Megan had been dragged from her car and left under all of that brush in the canyon, she still had 10 pieces of glitter in her hair. That same glitter was found in the front seat of Sanchez's truck, in the bed of his truck, and on Megan's jacket, which was found behind Sanchez's own house. So now TikTokers tell women to wear glitter when they go out. No man will want you in his truck if you're going to leave it behind for his girlfriend to find, and it might just help solve your murder if things go bad. Thank you to the LA Times for their extensive coverage of this story. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.